Welcome to Pemba On Demand, Physician Leaders Making a Difference. I'm Norm Chapin, your host. Pemba On Demand is produced for physicians seeking professional development. We discuss a wide range of topics on the podcast, including successful innovations in a variety of healthcare disciplines, current issues in healthcare career development, and healthcare leadership. I will be interviewing physician leaders from the U.S. and from other countries, most of whom graduated from the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. The information provided in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the University of Tennessee or any other organization. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to these terms. Whether you're sipping your morning coffee, commuting to the hospital, or just looking for a dose of inspiration, we've got you covered. We hope you will take full advantage of these practical, insightful, and relevant discussions designed to help physician leaders get new and build upon existing leadership skills and perspectives. Pemba On Demand will allow you to be an even bigger force for good in healthcare.
Welcome back to Pemba On Demand. I'm Norm Chapin, your host. My guest today is Sandy Valino-Stock, Managing Medical Director at OSF Complete Care 55+. Sandy was a guest on our fourth episode of Pemba On Demand back in 2023. Sandy, I'm excited to have you back on the show again.
Thanks for having me back, Norm. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's going to be a great interview, and I'm excited to have you here.
I'm excited to be back.
So the last time we talked, you were talking with us about your concierge practice that you had worked on during Pemba, and you opened after completing your Pemba. I think you opened it in 2023, and you've made the decision to pivot from that practice into a different type of practice now. But I remember when we talked, the concierge practice seemed like a model that you saw a lot of value in, value for you, value for your patients. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what worked well and what didn't work so well in that concierge model for you.
So, Norm, I actually started my final project for Pemba was the business plan for Invoke Med and Wellness. And it actually was more of a moderation of a direct primary care model where I was not accepting insurance at first. And so I launched November 2022, graduated Pemba December 2022. And so I tried the no insurance modified direct primary care model for about 4 months. And I came to a point where I said, you know, I'm going to pivot. I'm going to pivot in taking insurance. My patients that I had seen locally for 15 years prior, they found out I was starting back in practice and they wanted to join my practice, but most people in the area had insurance, 95%. And so that was something I learned in Pemba. Pivot early. When you feel that something is not going to work, you have to be able to pivot. There are times when you do need to stick your guns if you are passionate about something, but I was comfortable making a change from my original business plan. And boy, it was very successful from the perspective that my growth rate of number of new patients, it really increased when I did start taking insurance. So when I did start taking insurance, I did still have a membership model. Is a smaller membership compared to regular concierge. So I called it concierge style primary care as opposed to just concierge medicine because my target audience was not serving the wealthy and really being exclusive. It was really having a membership which would allow for seeing patients, spending more time with patients, and providing the type of primary care that I wanted to and that what patients were seeking in regular primary care, just wanting to have a little bit more time with their providers and a little bit more attention to their medical care.
So how did that work, having a membership model and working with insurance? How did the insurance side of the business work compared to the membership model?
So there are legalities that you have to abide by. You have to, in order, you could charge for You can't charge for things that insurance companies would cover. That's for commercial and Medicare. You could charge for things that they don't cover. And so the membership would cover things that the insurances would not cover. And so for an example is an actual physical exam. Medicare does not cover physical exams. They cover annual wellness visits, but that is not a physical exam. So you could have extended physical exams, and that covers someone's concierge membership for a year even, for instance.
So when you got to the final size of your practice, how did that payer mix break down between membership and commercial and governmental payers, for example?
So all of my patients were membership. I only accepted Medicare and commercial insurance that were non-Medicare Advantage or replacements. Okay. So the PPOs, POSs, I did not accept any managed care simply because my practice was so small and I started with just myself. I did not have any office staff to help me out. So that was really more the driving force of not accepting managed care.
Okay. So you basically fee-for-service models that would allow you to see the patients and charge them for things that weren't covered by their model, but you didn't go into any kind of managed care at all.
Correct. Not in my concierge style practice. Just again, simply because I didn't have the manpower to help me out with doing managed care managed care.
So before we move on to talk a little bit about the medical directorship that you're involved in right now, I wonder if you could share maybe one or two major lessons that you learned from starting up the direct patient care model.
So I'm a firm believer that everything that I've done from Pemba to starting my concierge style practice before starting this current managing medical directorship, I would say the biggest lessons, well, focusing the concierge style part, that practice, I reinforced things that I was doing right, focusing on the quality of care that you provide patients and paying attention to what they're telling you in terms of what they're wanting. So that phrase, customer's always right. It's something that when you are trying to find out what the demand is of your audience or your target segment, you really have to, if someone suggests something, you really have to take that into account. And so that's one lesson that I have always thought. And so that was reinforced. And then an example of that was me just pivoting to accepting insurance. The other thing is that you can't please everybody. So you do have to have a thick skin in regards to, even though you have to listen to what your customer's telling you, you also, if you have a strong conviction and you know that something is right, and maybe it's the timing. Timing may not be right for the product that you have. So when I opened up a practice with memberships, where in an area that it was almost unheard of, it's very difficult. So the timing may not have been right. It's possible that, you know, you take 5 years, 10 years from now, that if I were to open up the exact same practice, that it is possible that I would have had a larger patient panel.
What was your final patient panel size before you transitioned into this new opportunity?
I was reaching, I think I was almost reaching 200. So it's actually pretty good. It was actually pretty good. Many concierge practices that charge rates literally 10 times what I charge, they may have patient panels that are less than that even. So like I said, in my heart, I love serving people, and wasn't out to serve the rich. So I did want to have a larger patient panel than I did end up with.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit now about the new and exciting opportunity that you're involved in, OSF. Kind of walk us through what you're doing and what is OSF Complete Care?
So OSF is a Catholic faith-based hospital system. They're based in Peoria, Illinois. They have 16 hospitals amongst Illinois, Michigan, and Wisconsin. And they are a really wonderful hospital system to work for so far. I honestly did not know much about OSF prior to me starting with them. but I'm glad I am part of them. OSF has a really wonderful work culture. They really care about the employees are actually named mission partners. So we don't use the word employee at OSF. We use the word mission partner. And it really is an appropriate term because it just reiterates how we as mission partners, we're every day we are out to serve the mission of OSF, which is to serve with the greatest care and love. And that is actually part of what we say every day at Complete Care 55 Plus, this new model. It's a twist on primary care. It actually has a target audience of those 55 years and beyond with at least 1 to 2 medical chronic conditions. And we are out to help patients have a better life from the perspective meeting these patients where they're at, because life is busy, having help their healthcare be accessible to them, and providing what our patients need in terms of regular office visits, whether they're virtual or in person, so that they can address their medical needs, their chronic conditions, being able to see them regularly, and their acute conditions in a very timely manner.
So is this model, you said it's kind of a twist on primary care. Would you say that Complete Care 55 Plus is similar to direct primary care? Is it like a concierge practice? And if so, how is it similar?
It is similar from the perspective of the care and attention and the personalized service that I provided in my prior concierge style practice. The appointment times are a little bit longer than traditional primary care, where many times you're rushed as a provider, double booked. We don't do that at Complete Care 55 Plus. We take the time to get to know our patients. Even before, as a provider, a patient comes to the office, we do an extensive intake to not just get a list of the medical conditions someone has, but really get more information on those social determinants of health, try to identify where a person is in their healthcare journey and maybe factors outside of their health conditions that they may be coming in for, factors that may be affecting their health. So we do try to really get to know a patient.
How is that pre-visit planning prior to the patient coming in done? Is that a telehealth visit between a provider and the patient? Is it done by some staff in the office?
Yes. So it can be both. So generally, it is a audiovisual telemedicine visit. We have a navigator, and that is a central part to Complete Care 55 Plus. So we have a navigator that not only does these pre-visit planning visits where we get patients' insurance information, we identify the social determinants of health, just get basic information. The navigator also can help navigate the healthcare system for a patient. If someone's having a hard time getting in to a referral, something that needs to be timely, we can assist patients with that. So a patient asked if we help patients cut in line, like if they go to the ER. Unfortunately, I explained that we are not out to cut other people's place in line, but if someone does need, if it is an emergent referral, for instance, we do help, or someone can't find a specialist, we do help patients navigate the healthcare system to make it easier for them.
So if I was a patient coming in to see you for the first time, I've gone through my pre-visit planning, what would happen as I walked into the office that might set you apart from a normal, quote unquote, normal experience?
So when patients walk into the office, we have a very beautiful front lobby. Patients don't spend that much time in the front lobby because they don't spend a lot of time waiting for their appointments. We have a full staff that help patients out, and we time out our appointment times. They're a little bit longer than industry average in primary care. But we do offer our patients a beverage such as coffee, a tea before they get started at their appointment. Instead of showing their insurance card at the front desk, directly escort patients to the exam room. And our care guides will do as much of the visit as they can with the provider, of course, in the exam room. So that's the signing in, getting the, just double checking the insurance, and then provider sees patient. And then The exit part of the visit is also, and lab draws are also done in the exam room. So patients aren't scurrying from one place in the office to another.
So all of the encounters, whether they're with you or with a lab phlebotomist or anyone, occurs in that same exam room.
That is correct. Okay. Yes. And then our care guides at the end of the visit, after scheduling someone's next appointment right in the exam room, our care guides will escort our patients to the door. Some people are, you know, they have wheelchairs and they may need assistance. So we're there to help our patients with those things.
Okay. So when did you transition from your private practice, the direct primary care model, into this role?
So I completed the private practice May of 2025. And I took a little vacation. And then right away, I helped launch the OSF Complete Care 55 Plus in June. So there was really no significant time in between. But from a patient perspective, just providing care, it seemed like a fairly smooth transition. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it's very exciting, this the OSF Complete Care 55 Plus model that we have.
So how has the first 2 months gone? I mean, has the demand matched the expectations?
Yes and no. So when we first opened, we started with a panel of zero. There's performas. And so we really started out with a panel of zero. And so the growth has been actually pretty good, very steady. I've had some patients matriculate into my new practice, even though it's quite far away, the two offices. And so that actually has been very encouraging. Our best growth that we've had, or sources of growth, is literally just going out to the community. Myself and my team, we let the community know that we are open, and many people have literally found us just driving by. They have saw the signs and the building going up and all. And so we had signs that say open now. And literally for months, people have been waiting for this model to open up because they see the sign up front that says 55 plus. And they're like, that's me. And I'm like, hey, I need my previous doctor retired, moved away, or just too far. And so the demand for primary care for those 55 and beyond is very, very high. So there was a lot of research that was done within the community and the adjacent communities as to what was needed. And so this Complete Care, OSF Complete Care 55 Plus, was an answer to what the community had been asking for.
And how did you find the role?
I just got an email somehow. Being on LinkedIn, there were just, you just get things randomly. And I saw this and I'm like, oh, wow. I saw on the description, primary care, entrepreneurial model, willing to innovate and be part of something exciting. And I'm like, hey, that's totally me.
So it was just very fortuitous. You weren't contacted by a recruiter or anything like that.
No, I didn't even have resumes put out, or in general, I just saw this. And I was at that juncture with my concierge style practice. I was thinking, well, am I growing as much as I want? It had been a few years since I had left my prior medical group practice of primary care. That was before PEMBA. And so I was looking for something that was more team-based and had a more intense day-to-day work schedule. And so I did miss that. Even though I was burned out, which led me to PEMBA, I did this more intense work day. And I really love working with a team. And so being in private practice, having a very small practice, it's only working with yourself and one other person. It's, you know, I missed working with more people.
That certainly sounds like one of the advantages to coming into an opportunity like this. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what the team is there. How do you staff to be able to provide the type of attention that you talked about, bringing people right into the exam room, doing all their care? And what does the staffing ratio look like to be able to provide that level of attention to patients?
So we cross-train our clinical and non-clinical persons. We call them care guides. There are two care guides per provider. There are three providers. So we have 6 care guides and 3 providers, and we have 1 navigator in our the initial office. We just announced that we'll be opening another location in the future. And a care guide consists of a role of being a medical assistant or a licensed practicing nurse, but also doing the roles of doing the front desk roles. And so our care guides, they rotate and they do whatever is necessary in terms of guiding a patient throughout a visit and doing the intake. So far, it's worked very well. Having our team cross-trained and we're all trained to help one another out, it's worked very, very well for us.
So I want to go back and talk a little bit about one thing that you mentioned, that is the growth and the fact that you're already considering opening up a second site. What are the 2 or 3 metrics on the pro forma or on your quality dashboard or your balance scorecard that are really that you're following and that the team at OSF is following to time the opening of that second site?
So I don't have all of the answers to that, Norm. OSF, I'm part of the innovative division. It's called OSF On Call. Actually, there's more than one innovative division. But OSF On Call, we are part of that division that's trying out a new model. We are focusing on quality and providing and personalizing a patient experience. And ultimately, we're hoping that the experience that patients have will lead to better quality outcomes for even the ministry. And so those are the things that we are focused on. I literally have more meetings coming up this week in terms of where we are almost at 90 days out of the clinic opening. And so we're evaluating and changing things every day. But in general, Norm, we're focused on quality. And each day we're changing our processes and trying to figure out what is the best thing that we are going to measure. So we are very new. It's very exciting. Yeah. And we are pivoting along the way.
This podcast is sponsored by the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Haslam College of Business. In less than 1 calendar year, this program will equip you with valuable business acumen and leadership development not found in traditional medical school curriculum. Are you ready to join the longest-running physician-only MBA program in the country and a network of nearly 1,000 PEMBA graduates? Visit tiny.utk.edu/podpodcast for information about this exciting opportunity. And now we'll return to the episode. You know, I wonder sometimes where you mentioned traditional primary care and the productivity that is expected when you're in a traditional practice, constant strain on the level of reimbursement that we receive and that type of thing. Is the strategy at OSF to achieve such great quality that some of that gap with the productivity is closed through incentives that they get with contracts with payers? Do you know, or have you had conversations about that aspect of the business?
So I'm new to OSF. I am meeting the different stakeholders that are involved with the value-based care. I came from an institution where we were doing value-based care since 2009, ever since MIPS came out. And so I'm very familiar with and have been very successful at providing very high-performing value-based care while at the same time being very productive. So there is that RVU model of compensation that physicians have. There's the quality measures that providers also have to abide by. Are they in conflict with one another? Yes, they can be. So it's very interesting. I don't have the answer. Many people are still searching for the answers on that. But to answer your question, yes, providing good care that's accessible for our sickest patients, which are usually those 55 and beyond, we are hoping that it is going to provide that the downstream quality outcomes and better health outcomes that we're anticipating.
Great. Thank you. The other question I had is we talked about the team. You mentioned you have 3 providers. Do you have a physician and two APPs? Do you have two physicians and an APP, or is it an all physician team? What does that look like?
So to start, we have a physician, that's myself, and two APPs. The APPs do, they do see their own patients, but I do oversee the APPs. We really are a team-based approach. And so we really encourage our patients to not get used to just one provider, although they can if they want to, but in order to meet patients where they're at. Brick and mortar clinic has the those two APPs and then the provider. There is also a team in the background. We have 24/7 virtual care from the perspective that when our practice is closed overnight, on weekends, on holidays, there is a team of providers that are always available. Our patients can just go online and make an appointment. And usually within minutes, they can be seen to address any acute issue that they may have. We do encourage our patients to see our providers at Complete Care 55 Plus for their chronic conditions. If someone is having any symptoms and not sure about if they should go to the ER or can it wait until the next day, or do they need to be seen by one of the overnight providers, we do have triage nurses that when patients call our number or even message through the portal, that they will get a reply very quickly. It's very impressive. And so that's one of the things with OSF Complete Care 55 Plus. That's how we also differentiate ourselves. Patients can get care 24/7, not just from the brick and mortar providers, but we also have a team of providers that works together in tandem, and we sign out to one another. If there's something that needs follow-up even after hours, a provider, a Complete Care to one of our virtual providers, and they are employed by OSF, so they're not a third-party set of providers. If something happens overnight, one of our patients calls in to one of our virtual providers, that team lets us know in the morning. So we have huddles every day, actually twice a day, every day, to have good, smooth handoffs. And that's not even just on a patient case, day-to-day thing. Even for process improvement, we have these huddles. So we're constantly communicating and trying to see what works and doesn't work. So it's really wonderful.
That sounds like a great system. And so I like the fact that you're having actual live encounters with the after-hours team.
Yes.
So if you see a patient in the afternoon and you've sent them to the emergency room, and you haven't heard back, you could do a sign out in the evening or early afternoon when you're closing the practice and then get the feedback the following morning?
Correct. Wow. That is exactly right.
That's great. So going back to the APPs, at the time that the practice started, were these APPs already in place or did you have an opportunity to engage in the hiring process with them?
So the whole team was cultivated prior to my arrival. And so I was hired for this role and I joined once my concierge style practice closed. And so the APPs that are part of the team, they've been great. So we work together and it's not even just the providers, the care guides as well. It's what's really interesting is that we seem to all have this entrepreneurial type of spirit or just wanting to create something that in healthcare, in primary care, where they get to see patients be so happy and thrilled that their primary care is what a patient had hoped it to be, or even more so.
Now, one of the things that many more practices, especially primary care practices that are trying to monitor chronic conditions are getting involved in is remote patient monitoring. Is that part of your practice? And if so, how are you utilizing that? What exact types of remote monitoring are you engaging with your patients?
So we have two programs that to help follow chronic conditions. The main chronic conditions, asthma, COPD, hypertension, diabetes. We do have remote patient monitoring where patients are followed weekly. That is asynchronously. Patients will receive, say, a text message requesting a patient to input their blood pressure or their blood sugar. And we're able to identify trends before the trends get far out of control and say, wait a second, these numbers are higher than they really should be. What's going on? Let's intervene. There's another one where we have on-call advanced care, where we have a provider, a pharmacist, and a dietitian that will monitor patients with more than one significant chronic condition. And there are check-ins more frequently. And so those patients, again, same thing. If someone has been pretty unstable, we watch them very closely and make sure that patients have their medicines. Are they taking what they need, et cetera? And we try to intervene before, you know, a condition gets too out of hand. And these are happenings between their regular provider visits.
So I just wondered if you, I mean, you're almost at the 90-day mark. Do you have any early stories about RPM where it might have avoided an after-hours emergency or ED visit?
Well, we're just getting our patients signed up. There's a few that pop in my mind. They weren't part of the RPM model just yet. They had been new. But one person, blood pressure is uncontrolled, not feeling great. She ended up she did call her the RPM nurse. And patient was not feeling great, had some numbness and maybe some weakness in the arm. She wasn't sure if she should go to the ER or not. So she called the RPM nurse. Nurse said yes. And so patient did. She actually ended up getting admitted overnight. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, everything was okay. But patient actually, she did help do a commercial recently for us. She was a testimonial. She was so thrilled that when she called her RPM nurse to help decide what does she do. And this person is actually a retired healthcare professional. She was so grateful that there was someone there. And this was on a Sunday afternoon. And so she was just thrilled that there was some. She feels like there's always someone there being a complete care 55 plus patient. And so that was very reassuring for her.
Yeah. Well, that's a great story. It's not so much about avoiding the ED visit, but it's possibly not going when she should have and having suffered a more serious course because she didn't get the care. So
yes, she's doing great.
Equally great story.
Yes.
I want to go back to something you talked about just a minute ago. You kind of were jokingly referring to the burnout that you were experiencing when you enrolled in PEMBA. And I wonder if you could revisit that a little bit. I know we talked about it a little bit on your first appearance on the show, but maybe describe that burnout and how long it impacted you and how it impacted your decision to pursue your MBA.
So I was probably burned out for years in traditional primary care. The same basic stories, seeing a lot of patients day after day. The documentation at the time, you know, we didn't have AI with ambient listening. And so it was very difficult. I love my patient. What keeps you going in medicine is seeing the patients, the team of people that you work with. If you have a good culture, if a culture changes, then that can also then maybe sway your happiness. But in general, I didn't recognize probably the burnout sooner, and I didn't seek alternatives sooner. So if I were to do it over again, I would have been more cognizant and mindful. So it's another thing I learned in PEMBA. It was a buzzword the last couple of years or so, just mindfulness. But PEMBA and my leadership coach, we're all assigned a leadership coach in PEMBA, she mentioned mindfulness, just literally recognizing, is your heart going up every time you think about a certain thing? I probably should have been more mindful of my burnout sooner, sought alternatives sooner in my career. But I'm so glad that I ended up in PEMBA because I've always been fascinated by business of medicine, healthcare administration. I'm very happy where I'm at now because I am practicing healthcare administration in my role. I'm in an entrepreneurial style practice under a Catholic hospital system. It's very much aligned. The brand, the mission, all of that, it's aligned with my beliefs being traditional, but then also having the opportunity to try something new and being innovative with the goal that ultimately trying to help healthcare get better with all the common ailments. And so I feel like I am part of the greater, I'm at least part of working on the greater solution in healthcare. And I honestly don't think I would be where I'm at had I not gone through the PEMBA program.
I remember when we talked last time, you went into PEMBA with the idea that you were going to just abandon clinical medicine altogether. And
yes.
You came out of PEMBA trying to start up a direct primary care practice. And you realized that you had found a renewed appreciation and love for the clinical side of medicine. Do you still feel that way now? Is this a good balance for you?
Yes, yes. I love doing clinical medicine still. I'm glad I did not abandon clinical medicine. I'm glad I am doing more administrative aspects of medicine. I am guilty though, Norm. One of my PEMBA classmates, she similarly was going to abandon clinical medicine. And I was talking to her and I said, you can't leave medicine. Like, we need you in the specialty that she's in. What she ended up doing was starting her own practice, a virtual practice, and it's wildly successful. And so, yeah, I mean, medicine is still wonderful. We need more doctors. We need doctors to stay in medicine as long as possible, especially I do consider myself one of the older. I was a doctor. I rounded up on my patients literally up until a couple months ago in the hospital. So that's very rare. So us doctors that are seasoned, we have a lot to offer clinically, our experience. But I do encourage doctors in the clinical world to become more knowledgeable in business, healthcare administration, to be able to speak the language so that when you are as a clinician asking for something, it's easier. And then also not even just asking, being able to do something on your own, being an entrepreneur or having the smarts of how to be more successful in business and really minimize your risks. Even though I had my own practice for almost 3 years and I'm very happy I did minimize the risks. Like, the experience could have ended disastrously. So I really minimized the risks and I came out in a very good place where I'm at now.
Well, one of the things, burnout's such a pervasive problem now, and it sounds like you were in burnout or in a burnout mode for many, many years. Did it take you a long time to recognize that what you were feeling was actually burnout?
Yes. So there's burnout and then there's just being tired because you didn't get enough sleep. Maybe it was a combination of both. Maybe I wasn't as burned out as I thought. Maybe I really did just need more sleep. I did learn that I do need to balance life more. And in doing so, you can be more productive, not only for yourself, but for your family. You could be present with what you're doing. And you could actually be more productive for the health system that you work for if you really do be firm with balancing yourself. You still have to work very hard. I'm adamant about working hard. Work hard, play hard. But yes, it is important to recognize burnout and not give up, but find ways to pivot. And maybe while you are finding ways to pivot, if you found what you want to pivot to, it might be something you may need to do slowly and do it with a plan. I should have probably have done that more so, have a plan in terms of pivoting instead of just waiting until you can't do something anymore.
I think it's a problem I hear from a lot of physicians. They feel like they waited too long and then they kind of felt forced into making an abrupt change because they just were at their no tolerance zone or they just couldn't continue. So I think that is a good piece of advice, is to recognize it early, start to make some changes in your life and in your schedule before it gets to the point where you have to make a desperation move. Luckily, in your case, I think that move did work out very well for you. But I have talked to many, many physicians who made a bad decision because they just needed to get out of the situation they were in.
Yes, yes, it's common. I mean, many professions have, you know, burnout factor. Yeah. The other thing I would do, not just planning and pivoting potentially slowly as you are trying to gather the tools, finances, whatever it is, in order to make that pivot, probably would advise people to find a mentor sooner. Being in Pemba was a very easy way and quick way to gain mentors, but you don't need to go to business school to get a mentor. It is nice having formal coaching and stuff such like that and during Pemba, but finding a mentor in even just someone to listen to you, someone that may have gone through what you've gone through, or find someone who's doing what you want to do and approach them, ask them best way to get from point A to point B.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. I think that's mentorship is, and coaching both, and they're slightly different, but I think it's something that not all physicians feel comfortable reaching out for help, but I think that's a great reminder, Sandy, and thank you so much for bringing that up. So as we move into the last few minutes of the interview, I'd like to just give you a chance to tell me where you would like the practice to be in 12 months. How much growth do you envision and expect? And then where do you see it moving in the next 5 years?
So in the next 12 months, we are hoping to grow and have full schedules, all three providers. And then even as we open the second location, having providers pivot and rotate even potentially to the new site. We are really excited about this new site. There's been research done as that this is a location that does need this type of model. And in 5 years, more locations. The baby boomers are retiring. There's not a shortage right now of 55 and beyond patients that need a primary doctor. And so we are going to be there for the communities. And so, yeah, I'm very excited to be part of this new model that OSF is starting out.
Well, it does sound exciting. And I think this is a population that is growing and we're aging out as a generation. And so I think the complexity of the care that they need, people are living a lot longer, but I think there's many opportunities to try to improve those numbers even better if you look at our healthcare system. So it'll be interesting to see how this model works and the impact that it has.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Before we close, are there any other lessons learned or thoughts that you would like to share that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
Well, thanks for having me on, Norm. It's a pleasure. It's always nice, you know, just seeing another alum. I always get very excited when I see other Pemba alums doing such great things in the world of medicine. I'm just really excited. I was happy to be asked to be part of this podcast as an alum. And so I really can't wait to just hear more podcasts with other alums about the successes that they've had and their stories. Because everyone who comes to Pemba has a story. And I really can't wait to just hear other ones.
I have the best seat in the house for that. I just love interviewing alumni and talking with them about the different things that they're doing. And it is just fascinating. And I look forward to these interviews so much. I can't tell you. It's just a cool thing to do. So thank you for coming
on
the show.
Fun. Yeah, thank you so much. You're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Pemba On Demand. A big thanks to Sandy and the team at OSF Complete Care 55 Plus for a masterclass in building a patient-loved model without a membership fee and doing it sustainably. If this episode helped you, share it with a colleague. Links to Sandy's LinkedIn page and the website for OSF Complete Care 55 Plus are in the show notes. I'm Norm Chapin, your host, and I'll see you next time.
Pemba On Demand is released biweekly every other Thursday and available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castos, or Overcast. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player by clicking the subscribe button. Add Pemba On Demand to your podcast library today. I would also appreciate it if you could share the podcast with your friends or colleagues. You can also listen to our podcasts on our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/@ PembaOn-Demand, all one word, no spaces. Please hit the like button and subscribe. Also, if you have any comments or questions regarding this or other episodes, please feel free to add them into the comment section on our YouTube channel. We love hearing from you and are happy to answer any questions you may have. I will add a link to our website and our YouTube channel in the show notes. The website is tiny.utk.edu/PembaOnDemand, all one word. There's no hyphen in that URL. You will find the links to the episodes there. Please also check the show notes for links that were discussed in the show today. Take good care of yourselves and become an even bigger force for good in healthcare.